What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Nomophobia is a new phobia that, well, new to me anyway. I only found out about this morning, but it's one I don't mind admitting to, I think, having. And my friend and colleague Jess Kelly is with me, tech correspondent here in News Talk, because I think we're both victims of this.
We are, and this is a safe space so we can admit that we both have this addiction. It's a phobia and it's an addiction to the phone, and it's something that, even if we were in denial, I think everyone and their mother would tell us that we both have it.
You've been making efforts, though, and we talked about this before, to try and, I suppose, cut back somewhat in your use of your phone.
Yeah. Now, as I'm talking to you, I have it here in my direct eye line, and I bring it with me everywhere. But every evening now, I turn it off for at least an hour a day.
And what changes have you noticed, or have you noticed any?
I'm much more focused. So I would be a good multitasker. But what I found was when we were sitting down to watch something on TV at home, or when I was reading my book, I'd be kind of keeping half an eye on the phone. Or I do that real annoying thing of just picking it up just to check if I have any notifications. And you just think, why? Like, what's the point? So last night, for example, you and I were texting, and at about 8:30, I turned my phone off.
I actually had to stop there for a minute and think, where are we? What are we talking? Should we talk that much? I had to think, what were we talking about last night?
You were on
about a dress. That was
exactly it.
Yeah.
The vital conversation.
Yeah, it was really important.
And
stuff,
you might
right.
think I'm wild rude, but I turned my phone off.
Did you mute me?
I didn't mute you.
Yes.
I didn't mute you. I just turned the phone off.
Right.
Because I hadn't done my hour, and I was getting sleepy. So I just thought, if I don't do this now, I won't do it.
Yeah.
And sure, by the time I turned the phone back on, the only person I had notifications on was from you.
You're probably right.
Seven WhatsApps and two Instagram DMs, just checking if I'm still okay.
Yeah.
But
I didn't even notice that, imagine. Yeah.
But that's what I do. I've forced myself to do it now. And I find, like, I managed to read a book across last night and the night before. Whereas if I don't force myself to shut the phone down, half an eye is always on it. And the most frustrating and the freakiest thing is what I've realised, but I'm doing my phone free hours. So say if I'm emptying the dishwasher or whatever, I'll still feel my back pocket as if it's vibrating, even though it's not on, it's not powered on. It's all these phantom things that kick in because it's such a reflex to check the phone every 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's like when you put it like that, you know, it's probably a little bit pathetic that we're that dependent on it, is it?
It is, but I know for sure that I use my phone as a bit of a comfort blanket. So
for what?
So say if I have to go to some event or something.
Yeah.
I'm a great one for the fake phone call now.
Are you?
Oh, in a room
full
of 200
Jess.
People, rather than making the small talk, I will absolutely do that.
See,
what?
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, I'll step outside there now and just get better signal. Absolutely talking to myself. I have no shame at all. And it's the same when you're out with people and you're not overly bothered. I'll be
straight
there
to the phone,
writing the alphabet in a text message to myself. I have no issue with it. And I know it's not a great thing, but I do feel it's a bit of a social crutch for me, for sure.
Psychotherapist Hilda Burke, who's the author of The Phone Addiction Workbook, is with us as well, Jess, on the line. How common is nomophobia, Hilda?
I think it's pretty common. I think most of us have experienced this. You know, we've gone out and we kind of tap down our trousers and our bag, and we sort of do it, top to toe, and we're like, oh no, I've left it at home. So I think I think the thing, you know, that varies is how that impacts our day. So most of us will consider it certainly an inconvenience, not having access to our phone. But does it really disturb our day? Does it feel like, oh, the whole day is ruined now? And I think how much we feel it's ruined kind of gives an indication of how big a problem it is.
What's the gauge? If you're the kind of person who's, you know, half an hour down the road on your way into work, you realise you've left your phone at home, and you turn around and go back to get that phone, does that qualify you as a victim of nomophobia?
Well, I think it kind of, you have to put it into context. I mean, let's say you're waiting for some news that day and someone only has your mobile phone. It's your doctor or something. So, you know, in that instance, it's less about I'm addicted to my phone. It's just I need to take this call and it's really important to me and my health. But in another instance, it could be, oh, I don't want, you know, I don't want to be left out of that WhatsApp group chat or whatever, or I don't want to miss anything on Instagram. Then that's then a bit more sort of, I guess, harmful or addictive. You know, it depends what it is we're missing out on and what it is that's going on that particular day. Is it just, you know, social media? Is it just kind of stuff that's sticky and addictive? Or is it actually, you know, there is an important call coming in. So, yeah, you know, you have to see it in context.
So it's probably less about addiction and more about, it's the FOMO.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. A group of economists recently used the phrase a collective trap in relation to social media, in that, you know, a lot of us complain about Instagram. There's not many people I know, and particularly among my clients, who think, oh, yeah, I love Instagram. I love being on it. It's usually quite a negative thing. But at the same time, there's a fear that if they come off it, and some of them do for a while, but eventually go back on it because it's a fear of missing out, of being missed, of, you know, not being included. And of course, as humans, that's a massive, massive driver for us, you know, not to be excluded from the pack. So I think, yeah, I think FOMO is a big part of it.
Can I just say, though, I'm somebody who would often experience JOMO. The joy of missing out.
Yeah.
I'm all about the joy of missing out. I think my reliance and my connection with my phone is more based on my anxiety that I'm going to miss an important phone call or someone's going to need me and I'm not going to be there to answer it.
Yeah.
So I do think a lot of mine, and I'm sure it's different for everybody, but I would say a lot of mine is more anxiety based. It's that thing of what if someone needs me and they can't get through, or you know, and so that's why I've done the phone free hours, try and wean myself off it and try and have that break up a little bit.
I think Hilda as well, I'm probably, for me it's less about the engagement with social media, it's the contact, it's the being contactable, it's the nonsense of, you know, messaging you last night about a dress or something, like it's the being in touch with people is probably the bit that I'm more fearful of, Hilda, I'd say, than anything else.
Yeah, the being contactable, what Jess says, but in a way that is a fear of missing out, a fear of missing out, of being needed, of being contactable. So I think it is all part of the one. And I think we have a kind of love-hate relationship with that. You know, there was a really interesting piece of research done on college students in the US, their relationship with social media. And they were offered, they were asked, how much would you need to be paid to come off of Instagram and TikTok? And they said they struck at about $50 was what they would take to come off it. But in another, they also were asked, okay, if enough of you guys sign up to this, everyone on campus is going to be forced off. You know, it's going to be something that's regulated and policed. Everyone's going to have to come off it. And in that scenario, most of them were willing to pay $50 to come off it, because they were thinking, again, the joy of, you know, it was, if everyone's doing it, I'm not going to be excluded and I'm actually going to be free. I'm going to be, like you said, liberated. So I think we have a real kind of, there's a real contradiction in our attitudes to social media and even to things like WhatsApp, because WhatsApp is another form of social media.
Yeah,
because what are you
WhatsApp
doing?
Is
group chats. And it's broadcast and now you have updates. So WhatsApp is another social media channel. It may not feel as addictive maybe to some because you're not looking at influencers and yada yada, but it still has that kind of wanting to be contactable, wanting to see what people are up to, want to be included in the group, you know, wanting my pictures to be liked. So there's some of the same kind of drivers that make it compulsive to many people.
What's the long-term damage?
Myself, we don't want to know.
Seth and Jess look worryingly now at each other, right? But what is the long-term effect of this?
So I think...
God, what are we going to be like in 20 years' time?
Worse.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, smartphones have really only been around, you know, on a kind of ubiquitous level for about barely 15 years. So the longitudinal research isn't there, particularly on, you know, children's brains. So I think that's going to be coming, you know, in... In the coming years, I think we're going to see a lot more research, and the kind of, because you need a long period of time to really track people. So there isn't a huge amount of that yet. But I think there's early indications that, you know, there's a lot of talk that maybe in 20 years time, it'll be viewed the same way as cigarettes smoking was in the 90s. And we had bans and we had regulations and places where you could do it and not do it. So I think, you know, I think we're probably on the cusp of that. You see certain bars and cafes, you know, where they're like, put your phones down, no phone zone. So it's starting to creep in. I think there's awareness amongst people. People know in their levels of anxiety. People have seen clients self-report, you know, how it affects their sleep, how it affects their anxiety levels, all those sort of things. So while the long-term scientific research isn't there yet, I think people, we know.
Well, sure, look at Florida today and the ban on children under 14 on social media.
Right. Yeah, well, I actually haven't seen that. That's really interesting. And there's a school in Greystones as well.
Yeah.
A bunch of schools that have gotten that collective thing going, which I think is really powerful potentially. So I think there is a movement there, and it is gathering pace. And I think we will see more regulation and more boundaries in how you can use your phone and where.
Yeah, the thing with Florida, what they've introduced, it's going to come into law on the 1st of January next year. Anyone age 14 or under will need parental, or will not be allowed in social media. And if you're 15 or under, you'll need to have parental consent, because they are looking at the young people who are growing up in this digital era. They do have elements of, whether it's social anxiety, they have lack of social skills, it's damaging their mental health, they're becoming obsessed with what they're seeing, and they're trying to put boundaries in place. I think, Andrea, it's our generation that are most screwed, because we kind of came to fruition when this was all kind of like the Wild West, and it's still a bit of the Wild West. I know full well that being on my phone 12 hours a day isn't a good thing for me. Yeah. But if you tried to take it off me now, I'd bite you.
Listener says, I left my phone behind me for a weekend and I honestly thought I might die. I was a mess all weekend and I really rely on it for so much. It had all of my bookings for the weekend, my Google wallet, my access to so many of my accounts. I couldn't take any pictures. I was absolutely lost, says this listener. Oh. Yeah. They can join us.
I was at the Brits two weeks ago and I had to walk out of Dua Lipa performing because I had no signal on my phone. So I stood in the hallway overhearing it just so I could text my friends. That's how bad
Probably
I am.
Me too.
Correct and right. It's your fault. You're the problem, Andrea, not the phone.
Jess Kelly, your tech correspondent, as always, thanks for joining us. And Hilda Burke too. Hilda, thanks a million. Hilda is the author of The Phone Addiction Workbook and a psychotherapist there as well.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.